Now what happens?
Absolutely nothing,
Cole said.
I've done this twice before. Two whole Sundays. Nobody's going to come. Not today, not tonight.
When is the trash emptied?
Tomorrow morning, first thing.
Maybe the garbage man is a go-between.
She shook her head. I checked. The truck compacts everything into a solid mass as it's loaded, and then it goes straight into the incinerator.
So our secret blueprints are getting burned up in a municipal incinerator?
That's safe enough.
Maybe one of these sailboat guys is sneaking out in the middle of the night.
Not unless the invisible man bought a sailboat.
So maybe there's no guy. Maybe the whole thing was set up way in advance, and then the guy got arrested for something else. Or he got cold feet and left town. Or he got sick and died. Maybe it's a defunct scheme.
You think?
Not really.
Are you going to pull the plug?
I have to. I might be an idiot, but I'm not completely stupid. This is way out of hand now.
Can I go to Plan B?
Pull Gorowski in and threaten him with a firing squad. Then tell him if he plays ball and delivers phony plans, we'll be nice to him.
Tough to make them convincing.
Tell him to draw him himself. It's his ass on the line.
Or his children's.
All part of being a parent. It'll concentrate his mind.
She was quiet for a moment. Then she said, you want to go dancing?
Here?
We're a long way from home. Nobody knows us.
Okay. Then we figured it was too early for dancing, so we had a couple of beers and waited for evening. The bar we were in was small and dark. There was wood and brick. It was a nice place. It had a jukebox. We spent a long time leaning on it, side by side, trying to choose our debut number. We debated it with intensity. It began to assume enormous significance. I tried to interpret her suggestions by analyzing the tempos. Were we going to be holding on to each other? That sort of dancing? Or was it going to be the usual sort of separate but equal leaping about? In the end, we would have needed a United Nations resolution. So we just put our quarter in the machine and closed our eyes and hit buttons at random. We got Brown Sugar by the Rolling Stones. It was a great number. Always has been. She was actually a pretty good dancer, but I was terrible. Afterward, we were out of breath, so we sat down and ordered more beers, and I suddenly figured out what Gorowski had been up to.
It's not the envelope, I said.
The envelope is empty. It's the newspaper. The blueprints are in the newspaper, in the sports section. He should have checked the box scores. The envelope is a diversion in case of surveillance. He's been well rehearsed. He dumps the newspaper in another garbage can, later, after making his chalk mark, probably on his way out of the lot.
Shit, Cole said. I wasted 5 weeks.
And somebody got 3 real blueprints.
One of us, she said. Military, or CIA, or FBI. A professional to be that cute.
The newspaper. Not the envelope. 10 years later, I was lying on a bed in Maine, thinking about Dominique Cole dancing, and a guy called Gorowski folding his newspaper slowly and carefully and staring out at 100 sailboat masts on the water.
The newspaper, not the envelope.
It seemed to be still relevant somehow.
This, not that.
Then I thought about the maid hiding my stash under the floor of the Saab's trunk. She couldn't have hidden anything else there, or Beck would have found it and added it to the prosecution exhibits on his kitchen table. But the Saab's carpets were old and loose. If I was the sort of person who hid a gun under a spare tire, I might hide papers under a car's carpets, and I might be the sort of person who made notes and kept records. I rolled off the bed and stepped to the window. The afternoon had already happened. Full dark was on its way. Day 14, a Friday, nearly over. I went downstairs, thinking about the sob. Beck was walking through the hallway. He was in a hurry, preoccupied. He went into the kitchen and picked up the phone, listened to it for a second, and then held it out to me.
The phones are all dead.
I put the receiver to my ear and listened. There was nothing there. No dial tone, no scratchy hiss from open circuits, just dull, inert silence and the sound of blood rushing in my head like a seashell.
Go try yours, he said.
I went back upstairs to Duke's room. The internal phone worked okay. Paulie answered on the third ring. I hung up on him. But the outside line was stone dead. I held the receiver like it would make a difference, and Beck appeared in the doorway. I can speak to the gate, I said. He nodded.
That's a completely separate circuit. We put it in ourselves. What about the outside line?
Dead.
Weird, he said.
I put the receiver down and glanced at the window. Could be the weather.
No, he said.
He held up his cell phone. It was a tiny silver Nokia.
This is out, too.
He handed it to me. There was a tiny screen on the front. A bar chart on the right showed that the battery was fully charged, but the signal meter was all the way down. No service was displayed, big and black and obvious. I handed it back. I need to use the bathroom, I said. I'll be right down. I locked myself in, pulled off my shoe, opened the heel, pressed power. The screen came up. No service. I turned it off and nailed it back in, flushed the toilet for form's sake, and sat there on the lid. I was no kind of a telecommunications expert. I knew phone lines came down now and then. I knew cell phone technology was sometimes unreliable. But what were the chances that one location's landlines would fail at the exact same time its nearest cell tower went down? Pretty small, I guessed. Pretty damn small. So it had to be a deliberate outage. But who had requested it? Not the phone company. They wouldn't do disruptive maintenance at commuting time on a Friday. Early on a Sunday morning, maybe. And they wouldn't have the landlines down at the same time as the cell towers anyway. They would stagger the two jobs, surely. So who had organized it? A heavy-duty government agency, maybe. Like the DEA, perhaps. Maybe the DEA was coming for the maid. Maybe its SWAT team was rolling up the harbor operation first, and it didn't want Beck to know before it was ready to come on out to the house. But that was unlikely. The DEA would have more than one SWAT team available. It would go for simultaneous operations. And even if it didn't, it would be the easiest thing in the world to close the road between the house and the first turning. They could seal it forever. There was a 12-mile stretch of unlimited opportunity. Beck was a sitting duck, phones or no phones. So who? Maybe Duffy. Off the books. Duffy's status might just get her a major once-in-a-lifetime favor, one-on-one with a phone company manager. Especially a favor that was limited geographically. One minor landline spur and one cell tower, probably somewhere out near I-95. It would give a 30-mile dead spot for people to drive through, but she might have been able to swing it. Maybe. Especially if the favor was strictly limited in duration, not open-ended. 4 or 5 hours, say. And why would Duffy suddenly be afraid of phones for 4 or 5 hours?